George Ferguson, the interviewee is Milton J. Carpenter, 12-1580, the address is 702 Ridge. Testing 1-2-3, testing 1-2-3.
Okay. So you never lived in the actual neighborhood of Vinegar Hill, correct?
I was born at 307 West Main Street, and that was right at the top of Vinegar Hill. And I lived there for 13 years. And of course, I went to school at Jefferson School, elementary school, and that is an area that they call Vinegar Hill now. But the original Vinegar Hill was from the foot of Main Street and Preston Avenue up to South Street. Then when they came with this urban renewal, they named that whole area from the foot of Vinegar Hill up to 4th Street, down 4th Street, down Commerce Street to the old Preston Avenue, down 4th Street to William Street to Preston Avenue, and back out to the Preston Avenue as you know it now, that runs down by the from 4th Street down to the McIntyre Road. Prior to that time, the urban renewal, there were people who lived on 4th Street, Commerce Street from 4th to Preston Avenue, people that lived on William Street from 4th Street to Preston Avenue, and people that lived on Page Street from 4th Street to Preston Avenue, and people lived on 4th Street out to Preston Avenue. When I was a youngster, people lived on Preston Avenue down there where Lane High School is now. Or Lane Building, rather. And Preston Avenue did not go up into Market Street like it does now. It used to just wind around and come back out into Main Street. You can go that way now. But all of that was dead end. Market Street was dead end up there. And the original Vinegar Hill housed various types of business. And residents. There were some stores down there. There were some barber shops. And there were some residents. The firehouse was there at Water Street and Vinegar Hill. Now, and the streetcars ran east and west on Main Street. They ran from what they call the lower station, Sino Station, up to the university. One car did, and it turned around up there. Past Lambert Field, what was Lambert Field. There was a car turned around there. The other car came up Main Street and went out. They called that the Fry Springs car, which they call Jefferson Park Avenue now. And that went all the way out Jefferson Park Avenue to where the, just about where the Fry Springs swimming pool is now, and turned around and came back. At 10 o'clock at night, the streetcars used to come and back up into Ridge Street. And the car barn was right next to Mount Zion Church. And that's where they put them for the night. And the tracks ran up and down Main Street with a little track out of Ridge Street to the car barn. The site that's known as the Midway site Yeah, Ridge and Main, they're getting ready to put up a housing unit. Was the old Midway School. And that's where the whites went to high school. The black children did not have any high school here in Charlottesville at that time. I can recall that when my sister finished the eighth grade, my father had to make arrangements for her to go to high school in Washington. This friend of mine that you talk about, Mr. Tom Enns, there were 9 children in that family. And his father often told me that if he had been able to send his children to high school here in the University of Virginia, he could have left his children a much larger estate than he did, but he had to spend this money to send all of them away to high school. The Jefferson School that we attended there on 4th Street was, as you know now, if you go down 4th Street, you'll see the city yards down there. And at that time, it was Charlottesville had artificial gas. And they had this, made this artificial gas from coal, and people would go down there, and after they'd used the coal, they had what they call coke, and they'd use that for the fire. And the city limits were not as extensive as they are now. In fact, the city limits have extended a lot in the last 25 years. However, as I said, I lived on Main Street until I was 13. And then I left here and went to Cleveland. And I came back, but I had to go to Virginia State to school. At that time I lived on 6th Street Northwest. And what was on Vinegar Hill then was practically what was on there before was. As I remember, there used to be a Rubens store down there, a dry goods store down near the foot of the hill. There used to be a man that fixed jewelry and some other little stores in there. And then there were a couple of insurance offices there. One was the Southern Aid Insurance Company, their home office is in Richmond. And the other one was the Richmond Beneficial Insurance Office. And their office, home office, is in Richmond. To come up a little further, the buildings there were, well, there was a tailor shop and a cleaning press and a barber shop. Then at one time, we had what was called a Crescent Drugstore that was owned and operated by Negroes. The other buildings were more or less, there was a drugstore called Poindexter's, and there was a place in there, a confectionery store and a bakery. They were all run by whites. That was back in the 20s. When I returned to Charlottesville in 1941, what was on Vinegar Hill then was there were a number of things, there were a number of little restaurants that were owned by Greeks, and because of segregation they catered to black people. And after they made a little money, then they went someplace else and opened up where they wouldn't have to cater to black people. There was a pool room and barbershop and restaurant that was owned by a black person, and you had restaurants to open up and close down, open up and close down. You had one or two stores there. In recent years, one black fellow opened up a store there. So that was on Main Street, that section of Vinegar Hill. Now behind Vinegar Hill, they were all more or less residents. But those residents that people complained about, I should think if you're interested in the history of that section, if you would go to the city clerk's office and look up and see who owned those properties at the time it had urban development, you will find that most of those properties were owned by white people renting to blacks. And a lot of them had outdoor toilets. You know what that is?
Oh yeah. I'm from North Carolina, one of the actors.
They didn't have water in the homes. They had faucets out in the yard. I forget what the kettle name they call those little iron faucets out in the yard that you turn the water on and get your water. So some of the nicer residents that I would call in the Vinegar Hill area were on Preston Avenue where Lane High School is now. That blacks lived on one side of the street and whites lived on the other. And they came up to 4th Street. But those were taken over by eminent domain, the city, when they built that Lane High School back down there in the 30s. So that didn't have anything to do with urban development and this urban renewal. And urban renewal as it came about, and any time you have anything that's disrupted, there are a lot of people that don't like it, but we live in a time of change. And a lot of those people who are living in West Haven, for instance, are in much better accommodations than they were before. They have the heat, utilities,
plumbing,
and everything that's taken care of, and the rent is based on your income. I guess you read in the paper today that Charlottesville is the second place, highest cost of living place in Virginia.
I knew that.
And Northern Virginia. And you can compare, I don't know whether you're old enough to know, but when they had a urban renewal there on Lee Street and Moore Street in Richmond, and they put that Moore Street school, used to be on Moore Street, and they call it Carver School now and put it on Lee Street, you had the same type of complaints. You're going to have the same type of belly aches everywhere when you have any change, you see. Now, is there any questions you want to ask me?
Yeah. Okay. You said that you think that the people are better off, those who were moved.
Right.
But okay, weren't there people who had nice homes, who had, you know, indoor plumbing and all this, who were displaced?
Sure, there were a few people that were displaced, but I would say that the majority of those homes were property that was rented. Mm-hmm. And the two nice homes that were there, I imagine the people were satisfied with them, and the people who were renting were satisfied. But the whole area was a blight. And
well, I know you're not the person I should ask. I should ask someone, you know, on, you know, the city board or whatever. But how would they justify, okay, they're trying to clean out an area, you know, an area that has these homes, but why did they take the nice homes? Or, you know, how, do you have any comments about that? You know, why would they, why couldn't they stop at this block if the homes in this block look good? Why did they tear all those down also?
Well, that's part of the urban renewal. When you decide a location is going to be, you're going to have urban renewal, you have to comply with the federal government. And you buy up a certain tract of land and you redevelop it. Now, to give you a picture, they made this Ridge McIntyre road down to Preston Avenue. That was the right there where that brick frame building is next to where I said was I was born.
Yes, sir.
There was a little alley there called Mason's Alley. And if you drive up McIntyre Road now between the house I was born in and the next house, there was an alley there that went all the way to Commerce Street. And you can kind of see part of it now. So anytime you have urban renewal, they just don't spot you.
And they just clean up.
They take the whole area. And I imagine some of those people who had homes went into some debt to get a new home. But all of them that I know have very nice new homes. Mm-hmm. Very nice homes. And they might have gone into some debt now, because at that time, when they had this renewal out here, where you come across Cherry Avenue,
yes, sir,
and down in the Garrett Square urban renewal, if you went out and to purchase a home that was equivalent to what you had, and your house was assessed, say, at $15,000, and this home that you, they would pay you that $15,000 that was assessed at, but then if the home you wanted that was in accordance to what you had already had, and it cost another $15,000, they would allow you up to $15,000 on another home. And that, but that was after this project you were talking about, that, but that was with all this Garrett Street.
How long ago was this? When did this take place?
I would say, this 1974, I came out here, I would say around the late, between 65 and 70.
So that was right after the
right.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Right. And they came through with that. See, that they have this renewal down here, too. The urban renewal down on Garrett Street.
Mm-hmm. Tell me this, though. Do you think the blacks as a whole, that's like the black populace in Charlottesville, do you think that as a whole they benefited, or do you think that they got the bad end of the entire deal, the urban renewal? We talk about, you know, all the black businesses that have disappeared. And
Charlottesville never had many black businesses. We'll see where people get that jazz from. Charlottesville never had any many black businesses. I can name you the black businesses off of one hand. Prior to the entrance of chain stores, like Safeway, A&P and all. And this was when I was a child. Now the Indy store was one of the thriving stores in the community. They had delivery and everything. You had about three or four grocery stores that were owned and operated by blacks. But with the Depression and the opening up of chain stores, and you had several white stores that were owned by individuals, but with the opening up of chain stores, that type of thing faded out. Now they had several of those. This Jackson man you say you're going to talk to, his uncle, when I was a child, and his father were the only black outdoor advertising people in the United States.
Right.
And, of course, they claim that they have, because of signs, you know, all this laws about signs now, the thing is kind of fading. But
other ways of advertising.
Right. And then you had one or two small restaurants that catered to blacks, that were run by blacks. We had some barber shops. When I was a child, you had one that I know of, only one barber shop that was run by a white man for whites. The rest of the barber shops that were run by whites were run by black people. The barber shops on the university up on West Main Street in downtown.
That sounds strange, but I've heard that.
What do you mean?
Sounds strange that, okay, if I wanted my hair cut, I wouldn't go to a white man. It don't seem strange that a white man would go to a black man and get his hair cut, because the hair is different,
Well, they were trained to cut it.
Doing everything white people did, so why not?
I guess so. You're right.
And those men made decent living, very good living, they were running those barber shops. But then the white man found that if there was a decent living and operating the barbershop, and they started passing little laws. See, before then, you could come and work with me and I'd teach you how to be a barber. And you may not be able to read and write, but you could be a good barber. But then they passed laws that you had to take an examination. And the white barbers, these white shops started opening up so that they could,
We talked about that in class too, right after during the Depression, as a matter of fact, like all the black jobs, were being taken over by whites.
That's happening now.
It's frightening.
See, and you take right now, there were two or three hotels here, and the jobs were held by blacks. Waiters, the cooks, all porters and everything that were held by blacks. But you go into any of these places now, you very seldom see a black waiter or waitress. And all. Because they've learned that they have some money in it. Plus the fact a lot of young blacks have been taught that it stigmatizes them to do that type of work. Not realizing that most of their foreparents,
that's all they could do.
And that's the way most of the foreparents that have an education, that's the way they made their way through school, by going waiting tables and so forth, bellhop, and I used to bellhop, But now they've been stigmatized that that isn't the thing to do, and these whites have found out they have money.
True.
Because
in school there are a lot of white kids, working restaurants and stuff.
Sure.
What happened is that?
That's it. See, Charlottesville has never, it had, my father was the first black physician here. And up until 1974, we always had two black physicians in Charlottesville. Charlottesville supported. They must have supported the state. We had two black dentists. But after Dr. Garrett died, we haven't had a black physician to come in here. A young black dentist is here now, Dr. Page. But Dr. Jackson has been sick, so he's in semi-retirement, I think. And we had some beauticians and some seamstresses, had some laundresses. But see, all of that type of thing has gone with the new inventions. Mm-hmm. I can't find anybody to iron my shirt like I want. And all that has gone with the new inventions. Those type of jobs. Grocery stores. Barber shops are not doing like they used to do because these guys are letting the hair grow long. Don't go get a style.
Okay. Were there any significant events that stand out in your mind about Vinegar Hill?
No, I don't. It was just a part of Main Street as far as I was concerned.
You in the NAACP from
1954
until now, huh?
And I served president. Uh-huh. And I was in that during the time before you were born and they had the school desegregation.
Were you ostracized
by people because of? Well, yes. There's a lot of repercussions. One of the plaintiffs, judge assigned her to Maine High School. They closed off the school and stuff, so. They said Charles Ferguson did it, Charles Ferguson did it, I knew it. Still at the town?
Yes, sir.
Black high school here until about 1926. And this caused a lot of young people, well, it's an expense for the family, and then it caused a lot of young people just to move on. I mean, once they went away, families were, certainly as a child, going right around 15. And as the old saying goes, once you go away from home, you don't ever come back. And a lot of families were, you know, separated that way. They would just visit, see. And the grass always looked green around the cesspool, so they stayed away. and whatnot. And the job situation here is not very good.
No, it's not.
Because of Mr. Jefferson, people in Alamont County and Charlottesville never wanted an industrial plant. So we don't have any industrial plants or that type of thing. Highly skilled, spirits, Strawberry Carlton, they've come in recent years. But you have to be rather skilled to work in those things. And of course, the job opportunities are not as great as, they could be. And so people move on. And the black population is really decreasing here.
Yep, see you there.
So you're saying that you don't think that there were really ever that many black businesses? They weren't. So you're saying that the black business situation has been distorted, as you say.
That's right.
It's a lot. It wasn't what people think that it was.
See, let's say, for instance, in Richmond, you had black real estate people, you had black people in real estate, you had black people in selling beauty supplies, you had black people with secondhand clothing stores, you had black restaurants, and a number of things that you wouldn't, even over in Petersburg, as small as Petersburg, you had a few more black businesses than you ever had in Charlottesville. And Charlottesville has never been a town. People get to talking about it. You had black funeral homes. You had black insurance companies. One time you had all of the black insurance companies had offices here. They were set up as districts. Now you don't have but one black insurance company that has an office here, and their renewal ain't had a thing real to do with that. They fade out because they can't get enough debit. And as I said, and the stores that used to be here, grocery stores, faded out because of the chain stores. Urban Renewal didn't have anything to do with that because Engine Store is the only store that was in that area anyhow. The one way downtown, I can remember, run by a black man down there where Monticello Hotel is now. But these chain stores were all private stores, just folded up.
What do you see as the difference between, let's say, Charlottesville and Richmond? Why do you think it's basically the population of Richmond as to why black businesses are more successful there? Or, what do you see there?
Well, after all, you must realize that you got more people on church, black people on Church Hill, than you got the whole total population in Charlottesville. You got about a whole gang of black folks over on Church Hill. You got a whole gang of black folks up there in the West End where you live. I bet you got more black folks up there. I used to know. What has cut out the West End some is that highway that came through there.
Right. Precisely.
See. That moved a lot of black folk. But see, when I lived in Richmond, black folks didn't live up there by Berry Park. You didn't have any black people up that far west. But they lived all back out from the Riverview, Wallace Street, all those streets in back in there, Curry Street and whatnot. Yeah. And there were more of them up there than there on Charlottesville. In that one little section. Then Jackson Ward, there was more black.
Okay, yeah, Jackson Ward's crawling with them.
But the black population in Charlottesville used to be 1/3, I think, the population of Charlottesville now is about 40,000. It has increased some than it really was, 20 years ago. But the black population, the school population now is just 1/5 of the total school population, which means the whites are moving in, but blacks are not, and some blacks are moving in. And then another thing, a small town like this, people don't have the money to spend.
But the college students, that's what it came to them.
Yeah, well, that's all they've allocated to is, I mean, even before you had blacks, but the black population per se don't go out on the town. See, even though you can go to all these different places now, see, but don't there are very few black folks have a, except in if I take my wife out and have dinner and a few cocktails and all, well, I can almost kiss $50 goodbye. But I don't have that type of money, and very few other people have that type of money to spend. See, and it's because of the income. You don't have the money to spend. And so I think you just well be truthful about it. If I had to go in the funeral business again, I wouldn't come to Charlottesville. I don't think they're going to have to get another black doctor in Charlottesville.
And they refer him to the white funeral parlors?
Huh?
So the white doctor, of course, refer patients to the, I mean, people that die to the...
white funeral parlors, they better not. No doctor better refer anybody to a funeral parlor.
Oh, really?
If you don't, you can pull the license.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Some of them do though, but you're not supposed to. They're afraid of another doctor. No, I think the reason I say that is because the income is very low. As we said, the cost of living is very high. And for instance, a young man that works with me was living up in one of these houses on Gordon Avenue, and he was paying $15 a month. He had to furnish his stove to cook with him. He had to furnish his refrigerator. He had to furnish, the house didn't have central heat. He had to furnish a stove to heat by. Then he had to weather strip the door so the air wouldn't come in the door. And all those different things he had to take care of. So he got a job, got an apartment down here at Garrett Square. And he started off, I think, at $150 a month. And you know, furnished nothing, except he had to take care of his utility. But they had everything in that place. It was warm, comfortable. Have you seen those new places down there? And you go down Garrett Street and they have these new homes down there. You know, they're, what do you call them? They're joined together. Townhouses. Yeah. And then they have some apartments, but he has a townhouse. He has 3 bedrooms, living room, kitchen, and a dining area. And a bath and shower and everything upstairs in the powder room on the first floor. So. And his rent is based on his income, which means that you would be surprised at the rent that some of these people are paying around here. And they don't have anything. Got to have, you know what a chunk heat is?
Yes, sir.
A little round wooden stove, little round stove that you burn wood in.
Okay. And pot belly?
No, that isn't a pot belly. It's a little chunk thing. Just put wood in. You can't burn coal in it. Made out of tin. They might have those sitting around. And all of these inconveniences. And they are paying extortious rent when they can go into these urban renewal places and save you money. No, he gonna let you go in there and shack up, rent room, all that type of thing. It means the household income has increased, so they expect you to pay more rent. Now, if you don't charge your child rent, that's your fault. It was then time, young man, young woman starts working, they'll kind of be on their own. I'll buy a few pork chops and put in the icebox and pay a little something, you know, for burning the light and electricity and whatnot. But and that's why a lot of people have complained about that. I got my children in, they won't charge me more rent because that boy's working. If he's working, he would have to pay a room rent someplace. So, but they don't see that. But they do live. And this is the thing, and why I say it has been stigmatized. Because, and the only reason it has been stigmatized and condemned is because these slum landlords lost the killing. They were the ones who were making the killing. And I can talk about it because I don't own no rent. They were making a killing on the rents that they were getting from these people. And that's the only reason there's been a whole lot of discussion and talk about it. And if you take, do you know where West Haven is?
Yes, sir.
Well, see, I used to live right there on Payne Street in front. There's a street there now, but that was just a field. And there were a row of houses that went up there. They called it Cox's Row.
Cox's, yeah, I've heard of that.
Okay, and I think you had one, 2 room downstairs and 1 room upstairs. Had outdoor toilets and an outdoor faucet. No sink or nothing in the house. Well, that man that owned those pieces of property, he finally put stuff on them to keep them falling down. But he was getting, I think there were about 5 or 6 houses up there, and he was charging those people something like so much a week. See, he charged about a week. And I figured up one time, that man was getting over $100 a month from those shacks up there. Doing nothing, no street, no sidewalks, no nothing, just on a hill. So those were the type of people that, there was another place down here off of South 6th Street called Conway Alley. Called it,
Sketch Branch?
Huh?
Was it Sketch Branch?
No. Cox's Road was right there in Scans Branch. But this was down off South 6th Street and called Jessup Road and Conway Alley. And they had all these houses built a similar way that they were getting that rent from. And see, you got they'd had them for years and they didn't want to see them go. No.
That's an interesting thought.
Yeah, well, that's the whole.
Do that now. They do it now in the dormitory. They put 6 or 7 people in and charge them $700, $800 per semester. And then they keep on doing it. You know, it's the same thing. And then they used to have it where the heat was, you could control the heat. Now they set the heat. They used to do that. Now they set the heat to where it's almost cold in the dormitory. It's the same thing they're doing this.
Yeah, well, they, I imagine they have to set the heat in the lights because of the energy thing.
Yeah.
What do you mean $700? How many for one room?
Well, see, what they have is that it's like, it's not an apartment, but it's like, it's a dormitory, but it's an apartment, right? Different units. And in one unit, you might have 6 people living in 3 bedrooms, right? 2 in each bedroom. And each person pays, it was $700-something, now it's going up. I think it's close to $800 per semester. That is, you don't have your electricity included in that. But still, I think they kind of make it off the students. And they got six people living in it. I mean, electricity is included in there, but you don't have to, you know, you don't have to pay for it anymore besides that one time when you pay that set fee.
$700.
Well, it's close to $800 now, yeah.
Well, that's
they had
what,
six people in there doing it.
That's put it a semester. How many weeks?
Sir, my thing, yeah.
In school, a semester used to be September to February, end of January.
It's about 13 weeks altogether.
Yeah.
Well, spring is a little bit longer because we get 2 weeks out for Christmas, spring break.
Well, then where do you eat?
Well, those apartments have a little kitchenette. Right?
Yeah. You want your cake and eat it too.
That's not, I mean, what's wrong with that? What's wrong with that?
Well, you don't have either one, see. So, you could break that down as the students, but everybody is all hip now on having an apartment, having a townhouse.
Sound like my parents.
And so, there's the sucker. When I came along, you were satisfied to have a room.
Yeah, that's what my parents did. I wanted to try to get a room somewhere.
Yeah, see, if you get a room for $15 a week here in Charlottesville. But these students don't want that. And they don't think in terms of, I want to tell you like what I hear my uncle tell my cousins in Richmond. He said, now you're going to Union, and you're going to stay at home because I don't have the money to send you any place else, and I can feed you here, got your room here at home, because all of you, when you finish, you're going to have to go to graduate school, and that money's got to come from someplace, so we're going to start right here. And I said, now if you don't want to do that, you can go down to Whitlock to Paper Factory and start working tomorrow. And then as you've been there 25 years, you'll get a little pin or something. But so all of them stayed at home and they all went to graduate school. One of them's a surgeon, one of them's a dentist in Richmond, and the other one is a, well, she got a master's down at Pierce. But she's a housewife. She has taught over at Union Center. But see, here's the thing. Like for instance, if my daughter hadn't been on this desegregation thing and all this type of thing that went along with it, at that time, you could go to the school, wasn't co-educational, see. But anybody that lived in Charlottesville could go to the school of education and stay at home. And for what I paid 1 year for her at Hampton, she could have finished up here. See? But I didn't fight it because I knew she wasn't going to be admitted because of the discrimination. I mean, it's cases that we've gone through, see. But see, this is where so many youngsters, you know, are going to get it all now and don't realize that you got to get out your brother now and get your PhD and get your graduate work. Because all these papers, you read these ads in the Washington Post and in the Affirmative Action magazine and everything, what their requirements. They talk about making this big money, but their requirements are high. So undergraduate today doesn't mean any more than normal school did when I came along. You know what normal school is?
Eight years?
No, that's 2 years above high school that you could teach. See? You get a normal certificate and you could teach. But you've got to have and just like I'm wondering about this, emphasis all on this. Out in life, when you get out here in this cruel, cruel world, what benefits will you get out of that?
Well, you know.